Okay, so I thought we'd do is we're going to do probably another two shiurim before the end of the term, today and next week. And next week I want to do something on Hanukkah. But next week, Tuesday, is actually Yud Tes Kislev. It's the beginning of Tanya, actually. It's when Tanya all happened. It's the one of the main Hasidic festivals in the Lubavitch calendar, in the Chabad calendar. So I thought we'd do something on Tes Kislev to, first of all, explain what the innovation of the Alter Rebbe was. We're learning Tanya, right? So it's important to understand what is Tanya? What is the Chiddush of Tanya, right? What did Tanya accomplish that wasn't there before, so to speak, and how does it all work, right? So just first of all, a bit of background. So first of all, the 19th of Kislev next week is three things happened on the 19th of Kislev. First of all, it's the Yahrzeit of the Mizritcha Magid. That was basically in the year 772, Tavkuf Lamed Gimel. The Mizritcha Magid was the teacher of the Alter Rebbe. So the way it worked was the Baal Shem Tov began the movement of Chassidus. The Alter Rebbe's father was a Chassid of the Baal Shem Tov, although he never revealed it. The Alter Rebbe didn't know that. It was different in those days, yeah. And also, it was by design, apparently, that the Alter Rebbe had to find his own way to Chassidus. It was part of the plan. And the Alter Rebbe, besides being 3 years old when his father took him to the Baal Shem Tov for his opshern, actually, besides that, never saw the Baal Shem Tov. Although he called him his spiritual Zayda, because he learned from his student, and the student learned from him, yeah. When the Baal Shem Tov passed away, the one who took over mainly was the Magid of Mizritch. Right, and today most, not all, but some of them get back to the Baal Shem Tov, but most of the Hasidic groups that we have today trace themselves back to the Talmidim, the disciples of the Mizritcha Magid. Right, like there's a bunch of Hasidim that trace themselves back to the Ruzhina Rebbe, and he was one of the Talmidim of the Baal, and so on. That's how it works, right? So Yutis Kislev, he actually passed away. That was his yahrzeit, Yutis Kislev, right? The second thing that happened to Yutis Kislev, besides the main event that we always celebrate, is the printing of the Tanya. The printing of the Tanya was actually the 1796 was the time that the Tanya was printed. It was supposed to be ready for Yutis Kislev. That's what the Alter Rebbe really wanted, being that Yutis Kislev was the yahrzeit of his teacher, the Magid. But it got delayed for a day, and it came to him on Chof Kislev. I'll tell you the significance later, but what happened was, the previous Rebbe writes in a letter, and explains the story, that when it came to the Tanya arriving at the Alter Rebbe, and arrived a day late, he picked up the Tanya and he said, Chof Kislev, Chof Kislev, Chof Kislev. And no one knew what he meant. No one knew what was that all about. Later it became revealed, I'll explain it later. So, and then finally what happened was with the Alter Rebbe started a whole movement of Chabad Hasidus. And there he had tremendous opposition in Russia. And what they did was they spread a false libel to the government about him. That's how the story played out in this world. We'll see the spiritual significance of the story, but the Alter Rebbe, they said that he's supporting they accused him of treason, because at that time Israel was under the Turkish, the Ottoman Empire, which was an enemy of Russia, and Alter Rebbe sent one of the Alter Rebbe's colleagues slash teacher almost, because when the Magid of Mizritch passed away, the oldest or the one of the older ones of the Talmidim of the Magid was Reb Mendel Horodoker, Reb Mendel of Vitebsk, and he took over a little bit for a short time. And then there was a whole mass aliyah that he led to Tzfas, and the Alter Rebbe used to send their money to support them, and the Alter Rebbe writes in Tanya extensively in the fourth section of Tanya really. The Alter Rebbe writes extensively about the importance of supporting Israel and sending money to Israel and so on. So they said that he's supporting the Turkish government and he's sending money. That was all story. Lately actually he's been published a very interesting book in English. After the fall of communism, they actually discovered the files of the Alter Rebbe's court case. which was archived somewhere. It was in Russian, and it was translated to Hebrew and English. I just got it now in New York, actually. I haven't actually read it. But because what happened was with Alter Rebbe, when he was on trial, they interrogated him with a fascinating interrogation about understanding what Chassidus is, and what a Rebbe is, and who the Baal Shem Tov was, and even Kabbalistic questions. Very, very fascinating stuff. So we actually have a document in there, so, which is interesting. And Alter Rebbe was thrown in jail, and he was there 53 days, and he was released on Yutes Kislev. But it wasn't just that. Let's explain. So, because I think it's really important to have the context behind the Tanya actually properly, right? And then if we have time, we'll try to learn a little bit of a sicha that the Rebbe talks about this as well. But the Hasidic movement was established by the Baal Shem Tov, right? So then came the Alter Rebbe, something very unique, but the Alter Rebbe attributes what he did to the Baal Shem Tov. He was different to the Baal Shem Tov. It took the Baal Shem Tov to another level, but it comes from the Baal Shem Tov. What does that mean? So we know already going back, so we know that in Torah there's two parts to the Torah. There's the revealed part of Torah and there's the hidden part of Torah, right? We call Nigla the Araisa, revealed. Nigla means revealed. And then there's Sosim the Araisa, in other words, what's Nistar, what's hidden, the hidden part of Torah. Now, it was always there, it was given. Potentially was given at Har Sinai. Everything that was always revealed in Torah throughout the ages was all handed to us, so to speak, in a potential way at least at Har Sinai. But different parts of Torah were revealed in different times. Now, in the time of the Shas, in the time of the Gemara, in the time of the Mishnah, there were mystics. There were people who studied Kabbalah. The first sort of, there were always people that had access to the hidden parts of Torah, but it was really hidden. That's by definition hidden, right? And the first one to sort of start the process in a very small way of revealing that which is secret was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So he's attributed to the first one to sort of disseminate that. He wrote the Zohar, he taught the Zohar, I should say. It was written by students. And he wanted it documented, and he said they should write it down. And that was the first sort of kind of letting go a little bit of the vault and lock and key behind around the secrets of Torah, right? Yeah, it makes sense. But that still remained only to a select few until their Arizal came. The Arizal took it to a bit of a different level. The Arizal actually, he famously said, "Mitzvah legaloi zois hachochma." He said, "Time has come to reveal this wisdom, to reveal this part of Torah," and he started schools of Kabbalah. And the movement of Mekubalim, of mystics and the Kabbalists, all that sort of grew. But it was still very unique to certain people. You had to be a certain kind of person, you had to be on a certain level to be able to study Kabbalah, but it was certainly disseminated at a much greater level than before, and still restricted to those that were able to do it, able to learn it. Yeah, so the Talmud was written at the same time as Zohar. Well, a bit later. In other words, the Talmud, the Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was one of the Tanoim, the rabbis of the Mishnah. Yeah, but you have to understand. And then came the Amoraim, so 100, 200 years later. But you have to understand that, first of all, the Zohar was not revealed until much later. No one knew about the Zohar until later. Which is why even till today, which I don't, obviously, completely don't accept, but still those that want to say that it's questionable whether the Rav Shimon Bar Yochai actually wrote the Zohar or not. Now we know that so many tzaddikim have anticipated the Zohar, and we accept it, and it's had an impact on halacha, and so many things that's mainstreamly accepted. Of course, the Zohar is the holy Zohar, authored by Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, and it's the core or the foundation of Kabbalah, etc. Right? So, yeah, so I mean, when the Zohar was written, it was really hidden. I mean, the Shimon Bar Yochai didn't author it to be disseminated. The Gemara, on the other hand, Mishnah and Gemara, Talmud, was written for the specific intent of it being widely accessible, or to all those that could learn at least, right? So, the Baal Shem Tov started this, the Arizal started this process that he said, it's time for the hidden parts to be more revealed. However, it was still very close to the masses, completely close to the masses, right? Until Baal Shem Tov. Shem Tov came and really created a revolution with the Hasidic movement. And basically, until Baal Shem Tov, the ones who could learn even the regular Torah were very separate from the simple Jew. And especially the understanding of the hidden part of Torah, or the hidden part of mitzvahs, or the hidden part of the world for that matter, or even understanding the hidden base, the hidden essence of what a Jew is, was really not understood and not known and not really widely learnt, right? The Baal Shem Tov came along. Baal Shem Tov decided, no, it's time to reveal the pnimius, as we call it, pnimius HaTorah, the internal part of Torah, otherwise known as Nister D'Oraisa, that the hidden part of Torah, to go beneath the surface, not only in Torah, it starts from Torah, but it's revealing the hidden layer of everything that exists. Of most important, or of very, very significant importance, the hidden part of what a Jew is, right? Which is why the Baal Shem Tov was able to access all the hidden and to be makariv and to bring close simple Jews, right? Now, that's why that's Baal Shem Tov really revealed every year as a Shabbat, and then a Shama is filled with a munah, and even a simple Yid who can't learn can say Tillim only and keeps mitzvahs is amazing, and so on and so forth, right? And he broke that schism between the elite, so to speak, and the simple, and so on. But it also came together, but also Baal Shem Tov had his own select circle, inner circle of Talmidim, which he obviously revealed the secrets of Torah on a much greater level, and much deeper level, and so on. Now, what you have to understand is like this, right? So really what the Baal Shem Tov made everyone access is the understanding, the appreciation of the hidden part of the neshama, of the human being, and also the hidden part of Torah to an extent, but also the hidden part of the world, right? That Hashem dwells in the world. The world is not a contradiction to Hashem, meaning worldliness is, but not the world. And Hashem wants to dwell in the world. There's a famous story of the Baal Shem Tov, I'll just tell you quickly. The Baal Shem Tov used to travel around before he was revealed. The Baal Shem Tov was only revealed as a tzaddik when he was 36, on the 18th of Elul, right? But he was an Ister, he was a hidden tzaddik before that. But he used to go around he started this movement of engaging with simple Jews and so on and so forth. The Baal Shem Tov once came to a town, and in the town there was a shul. It was called the Shul of the Prushim. This was not an uncommon thing in those days. We'd have a great Torah scholar who, after many years, would decide that's it. He's just dedicating his entire life to studying Torah. And they would become a Porush. Porush means they would actually live separately from their family, basically. They would live in the shul room and just learn Torah day and night. So the idea was almost like complete abstinence and not engaging with the physical world at all, and just learn Torah and stuff. So there was one Porush that was in a shul. A great person, really. He sat day and night learning Torah, ate very little, slept very little, and just continued learning Torah. Baal Shem Tov comes into the shul. This guy's sitting and learning. Baal Shem Tov doesn't look like a big tzaddik. He looks like a village person. That's the dress he used. He was a hidden tzaddik. And he comes over to him, and this is what Baal Shem Tov used to do to a lot of simple people, but Baal Shem Tov did it to this guy. And Baal Shem Tov came to him and he said, "Good morning, how are you? How's your health? Has your parnasa?" And the guy ignored him. Like, why are you bothering me? Right? So I heard him repeat the question a few times until the guy just waved his hand and like told him, you know, get away, right? Like, what are you drain me a copy of? And the Baal Shem Tov said to him, he said to him a very cryptic line, he said to him, "Why are you denying Kutcha Brichu," which means Hashem, "why are you denying Hashem his parnasa?" Like, what's that supposed to mean? The guy looked up, what are you talking about? So Baal Shem Tov explained, it's like this. Everyone has parnos. What does it mean to have bread to eat, to have food to eat? It means you have the means, you have the resources to connect the neshama with the body. Right? That's what parnosa means. If you wouldn't have parnosa, we'd die. Because we wouldn't be able to eat, we'd starve. Right? What does it mean? It means the neshama and the body would be able to live together, right? That's what death means, right? So parnasa really means the chibur, the connection between the guf and the neshama. But Hashem also has parnasa, which means what connects Hashem to the world. So he quoted a pasuk, that Hashem is like the neshama of the world, and what connects the neshama of the world to the world. So he quoted a pasuk, and the pasuk says, "Ve'ata kadosh." I'll read you the simple reading of the pasuk. The pasuk we say that Master Shabbos say it different times. So the pasuk says, "Ve'ata kadosh." You, meaning Hashem, you are holy. Now, holy normally means you're separate, you're transcendent, right? Yoshev, you dwell, Tehillos Yisrael, the praises of the Jewish people. So Hashem, what does that mean? Hashem explained like this. Ve'ata kodesh, Hashem, you are transcendent. Yoshev, but how do you not remain trans? How do you come down into the world? What makes you dwell here? Tehillos Yisrael, the praises of Hashem. The praises of the Jewish people to Hashem. That's what brings Hashem down to this world. In other words, that's why the Baal Shem had this practice of going around to his thing, asking people questions, how are you, how's your parnasa, how's this, how's that, so that people should answer, Baruch Hashem. They should say, Baruch Hashem, they should praise Hashem. And in fact, the story goes, there were certain people the Baal Shem used to engage in, that they couldn't even say Baruch Hashem, they used to say in Yiddish, Gloib Tereibish, that's all they knew how to say Baruch Hashem, only in Yiddish, right? Okay, they were so simple. So Baal Shem is telling this guy, so that's the Eibish's parnasa, that's how Hashem comes into the world. He said, why denying Hashem's parnasa? So the famous question I think the Rebbe asks in a sikha, this guy was a guy that sat day and night and learned, right? If Hashem wanted to get him to say Baruch Hashem, why don't you talk to him on his level? In other words, instead of saying, how's your health and how's your parnasa, just say to him, how's your learning going? What was your latest chidush in the Gemara? Like, talk to him in something he's interested in, right? And the answer is no. Because when we talk about the Tehillah Yisrael, the praise of the Jewish people, praise Hashem, there's something very special about praising Hashem, specifically about something physical. In other words, saying Baruch Hashem, yeah, I learned 10 pages of Gemara today. It's a wonderful thing. And we have to learn. Learning is critically important. But the concept of bringing Hashem into the physical world, that you do by praising Hashem in the physical world, right? I'm just giving you an example how Baal Shem Tov was sort of, he revealed the power of a simple Yid. He revealed the power of a simple Yid that they can bring Hashem into the world because that's the power of the world, really. Externally, the world is a place that just hides godliness. But internally, it's a place where Hashem can actually live, right? And we can bring Hashem into the world. We can reveal Hashem to the world. How? Even a simple Yid can do that by saying Baruch Hashem, Kalev Terebish, and so on and so forth. Okay, so that's what Baal Shem Tov started. And this was also expressed in his Torah, and his Torah would be a very powerful Torah, which he would mainly share. The Torah, the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov, was mainly shared with those that were very close to him, right? His Talmidim and so on. Why is that? Because here we have to understand something to understand the Chiddush of the Alter Rebbe. Right? When we say that the revelation of the essence of Torah, the Pnimius Torah, the secrets of Torah, the secrets of Torah by definition is not a study that you can understand. Something by definition transcends understanding. Like even take Kabbalah, for example, right? Everyone talks about Kabbalah today. You know what Kabbalah is? Kabbalah is not a process of understanding. The word Kabbalah means receiving it. It's received, it's handed down from generation to generation. Right? So you learn about Emunah, you learn about faith. Amunah also is not really an understandable thing. Amunah, by definition, transcends understanding. We learned it in Tanya, Perek Yutes, I think it was, where Alter Rebbe talks about that transcendent spark, the Chochmah of the Nefesh, which brings a person to Mesiris Nefesh, which means he submits himself to something which is completely higher than logic, right? We learn about the worlds, Atzilus, you learn about the different Madregas, different levels of the spheres, and things that aren't things. You learn about what happened, you do a mitzvah, which revelation happens, which godly revelation takes place. All these things are very, very deep. To really understand them, you have to have a bit of a connection to them. And if you do understand it, even if you're a simpler person, you can understand the facts, but you can't really understand. You haven't intellectually internalized it. Why not? Because actually, it's not an intellectual study. It's actually something which is higher than study, higher than intellect. It's a transcendent part of Torah. It's not like a Gemara where there's a question and an answer, or a Mishnah, or there's a halacha, or it makes sense, and you ask, no, why does Rashi say this? Why does Tosafot say that? It's very different. Right? And that's why what the Baal Shem Tov was able to reveal with every Yid, to have access to the inner part of Torah, it was more about Emunah, more about revealing the deep, transcendent faith that a Yid has. Right? And that was felt, and that was appreciated, and that was connected to, and that was step one, of course, of revealing the secrets of a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it wasn't that accessible to the masses still. It was accessible in a transcendent way, in a soul way. They understood the power of the neshama, they understood that they have something special, they understood that every yid is amazing, every mitzvah is amazing, because it's just not about, not just about the tekel, but it's like things are happening, you do a mitzvah, all the things, everything. Could they explain it? No, not really. Those who were close to the Hashem Tov also had access to it on a deeper level, and they can understand it better, but it was all, again, it was all very short, very powerful, very Kabbalistic, mystical teachings, right?
Were women not excluded from that at the beginning?
Not really. Not. I mean, yes, to a point, but not. No, not completely. I mean, learning, again, they were excluded as much as. Actually, probably more excluded from the Chabad Chassidus in the beginning, only because just the culture wasn't for women to learn in long, complex, intellectual stuff. That just was. That was true with Gemara and everything. Formal women's learning started much later, right? But it wasn't close to women. It were women that knew a lot of Chassidus. I'll tell you a cute story, actually. We just celebrated, we just marked the yard side of the Mittler Rebbe, the second Rebbe, on the 9th of Shvat, 9th of Kislev, a couple days ago, Shabbos. And the Mittler Rebbe was known that he would have, the Mittler Rebbe used to have a thirst for Chassidus, like it was crazy. He was desperate always to hear new Chassidus. And the Alter Rebbe, his father, had a few daughters. One of the daughters was Freda, and she was very well versed in learning Chassidus. I'm saying, woman, learn Chassidus, right? Just a cute story. So she, and Alter Rebbe had a thing special thing with her that he would, once in a while, call her into his room, and say a mimer for her, say a Chassidic discourse just for her. And the Mittler Rebbe was very upset about this. And he was desperate to hear what the Alter Rebbe was saying. So he used to hide under the bed, in that room, hide under the bed and listen to the mimer. One time, the Alter Rebbe said a mimer, and was explaining the garments of the Kohen Gadol. Eight garments, right? And he explained each one according to Chassidus, what it means on a mystical, deep level. And he missed out one. He didn't explain the belt, the gartel. And Mittler Rebbe was under the bed, and he doesn't know what to do. He's desperate. He's desperate to understand the mystical meaning, the Hasidic meaning of the gartel. But he couldn't expose himself because he's not supposed to be there, right? So he took his own gartel, you know, Hasidim wear a gartel, right? And he flipped it under the bed in a way that she would see. And suddenly, Rebbe Sofreda says to the Alter Rebbe, what about the gartel? He didn't explain the gartel. So the Alter Rebbe smiled and he said, that's Berke's work, meaning Berke, how he used to call the Mittler Rebbe, Dov Ber. He said, that's obviously from him. So he understood, okay, then he didn't mind. But I'm saying, there were women that used to learn Hasidism. But as far as deep intellectual pursuit, it wasn't so common by women. But now, obviously, that's changed a lot. But I think in terms of Baal Shem Tov Hasidus, it wasn't such an intellectual pursuit anyways for the masses, except for the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov. Therefore, I'm not sure that women were excluded in any way, really. It's an interesting question, I don't know. In terms of the simple people's access to the teachings of Amunah and Ashgacha Pratis and all these things, which the Baal Shem Tov pressed and really revealed, I don't think it was any much of a difference. Really. Anyway, came along, that was the truth, Baal Shem Tov, the Maggid, came along the Alter Rebbe, and even as a student of the Maggid, started saying we really need to push it out to the masses, the teachings, not just the ideas, the teachings have to be pushed out to the masses. Time has come. And he was faced with a lot of opposition, not from the opponents of Chassidus. He was faced with lots of opposition from his own colleagues. And the story goes, just to explain, because it's all the introduction to explain Yutes Kislev. The story goes that one time, Alter Rebbe would disseminate, he would teach it, even the transcendent teachings of the Baal Shem Tov and the Maggid, Alter Rebbe would push out. And one time there was one of the tzaddikim, one of his colleagues, noticed a piece of a sefer of Chassidus rolling around in the garbage, because it was becoming so, I mean, nowadays there's so much in the garbage, but those days printing was a big thing, right? But because it was being now accessed by so many, like somehow a page of the Chassidus was rolling around the garbage dump. And this tzaddik was very upset. To him, it was like an outcome. It was a symptom of the inappropriate dissemination of Hasidus. And what happened was, apparently, spiritually, it got back to the Alter Rebbe, and spiritually speaking, was it the Alter Rebbe that responded? I can't remember the exact story. Or someone else responded. But there's the famous moshul, a famous parable that was given to explain this. Because what happened was that when this tzaddik was upset, when he saw the piece of paper rolling around the garbage can, he actually, this is a very spiritual, mystical thing, but he achieved that in Shemayim, there was kind of an accusation against the Alter Rebbe, and it was dangerous for him. The Alter Rebbe faced that a number of times, many stories, where the Alter Rebbe faced spiritual opposition, even from the higher worlds, about what he was doing in terms of disseminating Hasidus in such a way, right? So the story that was given was this, was a response, and the story was like this, that there was a story told about a king, and the king's daughter became extremely ill, the prince, whatever, became extremely ill, right? And it was desperate and critical, and there were all the doctors and everything. And then a very, very, very big doctor came, and he said that there's one medicine that will help this child. And that is, there's a certain very, very, very precious stone. If you take that stone and you grind it, you mix it with water and you create a solution with that stone in, and you give it to the daughter to drink, she'll be healed. The problem is that stone was not available anywhere. The only place that stone could be found was in the crown of the king. So obviously there was a hesitancy, and it was a stone that gave a lot of beauty to the crown of the king. And there was also hesitancy, and the situation became worse. And eventually the king said, okay, no problem, save my daughter, so anything, take the stone. By the time they took the stone and they ground it, and they were able to give it to drink, the child was so sick they could hardly drink. So the king said, just don't worry, pour, maybe some drops will go in. So they said that same thing with the Hasidus. The time came time when the Jewish people is desperate, they need it. For Mashiach, the situations have gone worse, the generations have dropped, and the child is critical. And at that point, the king, Hashem, in other words, is willing to take a stone from his own crown, i.e. Hasidus, the deepest concepts of Torah, and grind it up and put it in ways where it can be distilled so it can be accessible to people who don't understand it necessarily. And pour, as long as something goes in. Okay, it landed up in the garbage, but something goes in. That was there. Okay. There were many times the Alter Rebbe also. There was one Rosh Hashanah where there was the Alter Rebbe had a daughter called Dvora Leah, right? This is a very sad story, but a very unbelievable story. Just because I want to get to what the Alter Rebbe did, so you understand what the Alter Rebbe actually was able to do. And this Dvora Leah understood from her father, she was very great tzaddikas, and she was spiritual. And Alter Rebbe kind of also hinted to it, and that this Rosh Hashanah there was going to be a tremendous spiritual opposition and accusation from Alter Rebbe from on high, right? And the Alter Rebbe sensed that, and he understood that it's going to be a problem. He might die. This was before the Tanya and everything. And Varalea got wind of it, and she convened a Beis Din, a whole story. And she said to Beis Din, she wants them to accept that she's committing to go instead of the Alter Rebbe. Right? Bringing Tanya into the world wasn't such a big thing. It wasn't so easy. And a whole thing, a whole story that she told us. She the first night of Rosh Hashanah, she ran to her father, and before he managed to wish her a good year, she wished him a good year. So a whole very spiritual story. Bottom line is, after Rosh Hashanah, she actually passed away. And her only request of the Alter Rebbe was that he should take care of her son, who became later the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, right? And the Alter Rebbe really took him on completely and nothing. But I'm just telling you, different parts of the journey. Now, one part of the journey was the Tanya, right? The Alter Rebbe wrote Tanya. What did the Alter Rebbe do with Tanya? Tanya was a revolution, and in general, what the Alter Rebbe eventually started to do was more than just disseminate the thing. Alter Rebbe did something which was revolutionary. We don't understand it today because they would take it for granted. The Alter Rebbe did something that was incredibly revolutionary, especially with the Tanya. as he started to talk about Chassidus, started to put together the Tanya. He spent a long time writing the Tanya. It was like a very, very foundational thing. What he did with Tanya was he took something which by definition cannot be understood intellectually, is transcendent, and he brought it down to the world of intellect so that the human brain can actually understand it. Which is a miracle, because it's an oxymoron. He took things which by definition are not understandable and he put them into the human brain. That's the Chiddush of the Alter Rebbe. That's Chabad. It's not only about making teachings of Hashem Tov so accessible, but it's also about explaining in bringing down the, in other words, that the Amunah, put it in different words, the Amunah just not remain Amunah, because what happened with Baal Shem Tov was, it was step one, Baal Shem Tov revealed the Amunah of every Yid. But there was still a disconnect between the Amunah, which was the essence of the soul, and the spirituality and the transcendence of the soul, a disconnect between that and the consciousness of the person. In other words, to live with that Amunah, you have to override the brain. The Alter Rebbe said, no, you've got to serve Hashem with the brain. So the Amunah has to be translated into the brain. You see what I'm saying? And the Alter Rebbe wrote the first part of Tanya, 53 chapters, 2 years before he was arrested. And then he was arrested. And he was in jail for 53 days, corresponding to the 50 chapters of Tanya. Yeah, they were probably. So, yeah, what happened was they first published. Now, they were first wrote the Tanya, first started saying the Tanya. They were actually said in the form of Mamorim, actually, to begin with. But they were edited them with the whole story, and they were published in sort of booklets. They weren't actually printed, they were like, we call kuntresim, handwritten, copied, whatever the case is. Then, after a while, Alter Rebbe realized it has to be printed because there were some mistakes were starting to creep in and so on. And the printing of the Tanya, which was considered a, because the Rebbes of Chabad always say when you print something, that's an amazing step, spiritually speaking, because it means you're now embedding it into eternity, like it's there forever now, like you printed it, right? That was 2 years before the story of Yitzchak Kislev, the Alter Rebbe. When the Alter Rebbe was in jail, right? But not that it was in jail, the Baal Shem Tov and the Maggid appeared to him. This is wild stuff, if you understand. But Yitzchak Kislev was a wild yantiv. They appeared to him. The tradition of our Rebbes, the previous Rebbe speaks about this, the Rashab, the Rebbe spoke about it, that it wasn't in a dream, it was real. It was similar to what it says in the Gemara about Rebbe Yehuda Anasi from the Mishnah, that he used to come back every Shabbos to his family for a few minutes, for a while, right? Make Kiddush with him. So the Baal Shem Tov and the Maggid actually appeared to the Alter Rebbe in his cell. How do we know the story? Because how do we know that it was a real appearance? Because there was in the time of the Friedrich Rebbe, there was someone who traveled to the prison that the Alter Rebbe was in, and he came back and reported to the Friedrich Rebbe that he was in the cell where the Alter Rebbe sat. Somebody found out, I don't know exactly right. And the Friedrich Rebbe said to him, was there room for three people? Otherwise not correct. Anyway, so, and it was that time that the Alter Rebbe asked the Baal Shem Tov and the Maggid, why am I here? Why am I here? So they told him, because you've started to disseminate the teaching of Chassidus in such a way that there's a spiritual opposition from Shemayim. It's called a kitru. Kitru means an accusation, like, and they're blocking you from Shemayim. There's blockages happening. It's a scary thing to do, and that's why you landed up here. To which the Alter Rebbe replied, if that's the case, when I come out, should I stop? And the Baal Shem Tov and the Maggid said, no. Now that you've broken it through, you got to keep going full force. That's why we have this thing that Rabbi Rashab explains, that before Yudas Kislev, there was Tanya, and the Alter Rebbe used to say Mamorim, but it was very short, punchy, powerful, inspirational things. Chabad style, but still not what we have today. Baal Shem Tov, when the Baal Rebbe came out of jail, which in Hasidic Sichas is referred to as after Peterburg. Peterburg was St. Petersburg, which was called then, and Alter Rebbe sat there. But after the story of Peterburg, Chassidus started to flow much, much, much bigger. So, therefore, and permission, spiritual mission, so to speak, wasn't just that they let him out, the officers and the governors let him out, but spiritual position was then granted to reveal Chabad Chassidus in the whole world. And the idea was that it got stronger and stronger and stronger, more accessible, till the Rebbe writes that the previous Rebbe started to print Chassidus even in other languages. And today, the Rebbe's view is that every Yid must learn Chassidus, right? So that's the idea. But the idea was that it wasn't just, it started with the Tanya, but it was ratified, so to speak, on Yitzchak Kislev, right? The whole process. But it was, the Chiddush was taking something which is intrinsically higher than Seichel and bring it down to the brain of the person, the physical human brain, that even the human brain can understand something which by definition is cannot be understood by the human brain. And the Mittler Rebbe took it to another level, into Mach Tzedek. And then it's not just the Hasidus, it went to the heart, it went to the davening, it went to everything. And what we have today, where the Rebbe now disseminated Yiddishkeit in this powerful way to the whole world, is all part of it, it's all part of that journey. Where now it comes through to even the most non-religious person, whatever the case is, they can have access to that light as well. Today's story, when the Alter Rebbe finished the Tanya, and then we're going to print it, the Alter Rebbe sent a messenger, just to give you a little bit of understanding, to the city of Anipoli. And at that time, in Anipoli, there were two people there. There was the great Baditchev Rav, I believe Yitzchok Baditchev. I'm mixing two things. There was the great Reb Zusha of Anipoli, and there was another tzaddik called Reb Yehuda Leib HaKohen. And the town had like a bridge. When the messenger came, he gave one copy of the manuscripts to Reb Yehuda Leib HaKohen and one copy of the manuscript to the Reb Zusha. And they both sat down and started learning the Tanya. And in the middle of the night, each one of them got amazingly excited. Each one decided they have to go and tell the other one. They didn't know the other one had the Tanya also. And they met on the bridge. And the story goes that Gans Anipoli had gebrennt. That it was such an energy, the whole Anipoli was burning, spiritually speaking, right? The Baditchev Rav, Rebbe Yitzchok Baditchev, when he got the Tanya, he learned it and he said, he didn't understand, he never knew that it was possible to take such a big God and put him into such a small book. That's what Baditchev Rav said, right? Okay. Later on, I wanted to show you, on the handout you have, in that first part, that's a letter from the Rebbe Rashab. The whole story why he wrote this letter, but the Rebbe Rashab was a famous letter that he wrote. It was also a revolutionary letter. And he said like this, Yutes Kislev, the top great red box. He says, Achag, this is the festival, Asher Podo B'Sholem Nafshenu, that our soul was redeemed, V'Oir V'Chayes Nafshenu, and the light and the energy of our neshama Nitalonu was given to us. Hayoyim Azeh, this day, who Rosh Hashanah L'Dach, is the Rosh Hashanah of Dach. Dach is another word for Chassidus. Divrei Elokim Chai, the words of the living God, right? Asher hinchilu avoiseinu, that our forebearers, our ancestors, bequeathed to us, Hakadoshim, of blessed memory, those are the acronyms. And he ends that paragraph and he says, V'hi Torah sabal Shem Tov Zal. And this is the Torah of the Baal Shem Tov. What do you mean by that? He meant the fruition, the actualization of the Torah of the Baal Shem Tov came out in Tanya, came out in Yitzchak Kislev, that it was able to come down, not just remain transcendent, even within the person, although accessible, but came down into the consciousness of the person through intellect and feeling and midas and things like that.
All the technical stuff came from the Baal Shem Tov. The whole conception of Silas, Maria.
No, actually it came before that. That was already part of Kabbalah. Kabbalah wasn't Chassidus. Chassidus is based on Kabbalah. Kabbalah was teachings of the technical stuff, really, right? The Yichudim, the Sphiris. This came all from Arizal. I mean, Arizal. The Chassidus is based on Kabbalah, and particularly the Kabbalah of the Arizal. The way he understood it. Arizal learned with the Leonovi Kabbalah. That's traditional. And that's the Shitta. That's the. But Shem Tov took it more into the idea of Amunah and the Shomer and that kind of thing, right? And the understanding of mitzvahs and revealing the hidden part of a yid, of a mitzvah, of the world. That's why Hashem took the concepts of the hidden part of Torah and brought it down to that sort of application of emunah and accessing the transcendence within the person, within the mitzvah, within the world, and so on. But still not at the level that it was in the consciousness, accessible to the consciousness of the human being, the intellectual consciousness of the human being, and therefore to be internalized by the human being. And that's the Chiddush of the Alter Rebbe. In order to do that, the Rebbe explains that it's not so. The Rebbe, the Tanya is not just Kabbalah; it has Kabbalistic concepts into it. It's actually deeper than Kabbalah, because in order to do that, in order to bring the hidden parts of Torah into the human intellectual mind, it required a drawing down of the deepest levels of Torah, called the Etzem of Torah, the essence of Torah, which is both higher than the revealed part and the hidden part of Torah, in order to combine the two, so to speak. In order to bring that which is intrinsically hidden to that which was intrinsically open and understood, both in Torah and the world, it needs the deepest level of Torah to be revealed, which is the teaching of Chassidus. And able to do that, right? That's all, yeah. So, I'll just briefly tell you, I'm going to learn a sikha. It's got to do with this week's parasha also. Because the Shalom HaKadosh says that everything in this world is, everything that happens in the Yom Tov and the Chagim is always connected to the parasha. So this week's parasha, we have this thing that, if you have a look on your handout, just have a look at the first one. You know that Yaakov Avinu, he moves his whole family across the stream, and then he goes back to retrieve some jugs, right? And it says, Vayivoser Yaakov Levadoi, Yaakov was left alone. Vayikovek ish imoy, and a man, meaning a malach, wrestled with him, ad alois hashachar, until dawn. Right, famous story of the malach fighting with Yaakov. Okay, say Chazal, what does that mean? What's vayivoser Yaakov levadoi? What do you mean he was left alone, and why was he left alone? Says Chazal, lekadoi, he went back for a couple of jugs. He left a few jugs, a few little glass jugs. He left there. Right, he went back to get them. Okay. There's another medrash that says that, what does it mean, Vayivoser Yaakov Levadoi? That Yaakov was left alone. Says the medrash, it's connected to a pasuk. Right? It's connected to a pasuk, V'niskov Hashem Levadoi, by Yoimahu. Pasuk in Yeshayahu Hanover, the second pasuk on the page, underlined. That when it comes Mashiach, that Hashem in his aloneness, so to speak, will become so exalted on that day, will be able to be revealed. Hashem is like ultimate transcendent level, which is the same word as Levadoi. And the Medrash said that's connected with the Pasuk that says that Yaakov remained alone. It's an allusion to the coming of Mashiach. So the Rebbe says, very interesting, these two interpretations of the word Levadoi are opposite. The first interpretation means Levadoi, you got left for a couple of jugs. That's like a very low down thing, right? The lowest nothing. Yeah? And the second interpretation is that's connected with the highest revelation of Hashem when Mashiach will come, right? What does it mean? So the Rebbe in that Sikha, he connects with Yutis Kislev in the following way. He says like this. Because I don't know if you realize what we've just explained actually contains a certain paradox. I'll explain. So he says like this, there's two explanations. How comes the teaching of Chassidus was revealed at the end of all generations before Mashiach come? Why? Right? He says we find two opposite explanations. One explanation is because of the lowliness of our generation. We need stronger medicine. Right? We're not able to serve Hashem. It used to be the Kisav Hashem, just learning Gemara, learning the revealed part of Torah. And now we're sick. We're much lower, right? And therefore, we need much, much stronger medication. Like the marshal of the king with the stone, right? That I brought you before. That's one explanation. There's another explanation. We know that the 6 millennia, right, the 6,000 years is compared to the 6 days of the week. And right now, we're at the point of Erev Shabbos. We're Erev Shabbos after midday. The 7th, of course, millennia is Mashiach. And right? I mean, we could bring in Shabbos early. He was trying to bring in Shabbos early, but there's a minhag. It's brought down in Shulchan Aruch that everyone practices minhag, but there's an interesting minhag that on Friday, you're supposed to taste from the Shabbos food. Make a kugel, you have a little piece of kugel, a spoon of kugel, a spoon of the cholent, whatever this is. And there are some people that actually do this, it's like a minhag. So therefore, now we're Erev Shabbos after midday, so we're going to taste the food of Mashiach. Mashiach will come, we know it'll be the ultimate revelation of the deepest secrets of Torah, even more than now. But now we have to taste it, so we have chassidus. The Rebbe says, that's a contradiction. Again, same thing. One explanation is saying, like, because we saw we're such a low down generation. Now the one is saying, no, because we've got to taste the food of Mashiach. So he goes through this whole process, similar to what I've just explained, in a different way a little bit, but it's similar to what I explained. He comes back, the whole idea was that the Chassidus movement or the Chassidus teaching is combined, brought down the highest ideas into the lowest form of understanding. That even a person with a very basic brain and very basic knowledge and a very basic connection with Yiddishkeit can also access the teachings and understandings of Chassidus. Right? And explains it wasn't only, he says it was different to Amunah. Amunah would remain separate, but here became part of the person. Right? Same thing with the mitzvah, same thing we find even with a few things, a few examples. This also became true with leadership. Before the Baal Shem Tov, Jewish leadership was very separate and aloof and detached from the common person. Chassidus brought them together and so on and so forth. But the point is, how do you bring it together? It has to be the highest form of Torah is able then to come to the lowest form of existence. The lower down the Chassidus reaches means it comes from a higher source. And that's what we explained before, that in order to make a combination, right? So therefore that brings together two explanations. On the one hand, we're in a generation today, it's like Yaakov with the little jugs. We're just the pachim talim, the small little things. On the other hand, we're connected to the greatest exaltation of Hashem that will happen when Mashiach comes, because they have to work together. That's how it works. The fact that you can bring it down to our generation means because it's coming from that source, and those are the two explanations coming together. Bottom line is, that's Yutas. Next week, Yutas, by the way, is Tuesday. Next week. Oh, I wanted to tell you about the Chof Kislev with the Tanya, right? So the story of we actually celebrate 2 days, Yutes and Chof, because the story goes that Yutas Kislev was, the Alter Rebbe was let out of jail on Tuesday, the 19th of Kislev. And they were sitting there waiting to take him, and he was supposed to go to a particular address, this is how the story goes, he was supposed to go to a house where Chassid lived in St. Petersburg. But there was an upstairs and a downstairs, and they mixed it up. Instead of taking him to the address where the Chassidim were waiting for him, they took him to the upstairs apartment where a tremendous opponent of the Alter Rebbe lived. A vehement opponent of the Alter Rebbe lived. And the Alter Rebbe fell into that house. And the guy sees he's got the Alter Rebbe in his house. So he didn't let him out. He treated him well, the story goes. He offered him a cup of tea. But then he started to badger the Alter Rebbe for a few hours. And the Chassidim didn't know what happened to him. Chassidim didn't know what happened to the Alter Rebbe. Supposed to be out, didn't know what happened to him. They start asking questions. Why do you have to change the nusach of the tefillah? Why do you have to change the kedusha we say in Musaf of Shabbos? Why do you do this? He started badgering with questions. Until the Chassidim realized what happened. By the time they realized what happened, it was really the 20th of Kislev. It was nighttime, right? And they came and they heard from the outside the door, they heard these questions. You know, we say, and Chassidim say, I mean, the Sfarim already said it before, but in the Ashkenazi world, it wasn't accepted. It was Krum Narizal, really, to say on Shabbos called Keser. You know, Keser is the Kedusha we say on the repetition of the Shemoneh Esrei on Shabbos. Ashkenaz doesn't say that, they say Naritzcho, they say, right? In the Ashkenazi world, no one said Keser at that time. The Alter Rebbe introduced it, the Chassidim, Hashem introduced it, right? So they heard him screaming at the Alter Rebbe, what? Naritzcho was no good for you? You needed Keser? Anyway, they knocked on the door, he wouldn't open the door. So they bashed down the door. There was Chassidim of the Alter Rebbe in that group, not only the Alter Rebbe, there was Chassidim of other Rebbes as well. They were just general Chassidim, not only Chabad, they were just other Chassidim there. And they broke down the door and they took the Alter Rebbe out. Story goes that they actually wanted to, they were really angry with this guy. And they wanted to hurt him, and the Alter Rebbe wouldn't let. The Alter Rebbe said, no, leave him, it's fine. But the Alter Rebbe said he had anguish there because it was you know, the fact that he had to be there and he was being challenged the whole time was painful. So it came out that he really wasn't properly, the day is Yutis Kislev, and that's the day which gives us power to really learn Chassidus, and that's what Rabbi Rashab said, it's Rosh Hashanah of Chassidus. That's the day that gives us the power to learn Chassidus and to bring Chassidus and to teach Chassidus and so on. But really the redemption wasn't complete until the 20th of Kislev, which then Chassidim understood what happened 2 years before, that the Alter Rebbe wanted the Tanya to be printed for Yutes Kislev, which is the yard side of the Magid. It came a day later on Chof Kislev. The Alter Rebbe said, Chof Kislev, Chof Kislev, Chof Kislev. He sensed that there would be something that would be Chof Kislev, would be be the day, not so much Yutes Kislev. Okay, there's a little about Yutes Kislev. I thought that would be a nice thing to go through.
Thank you.
Good. All the best.